The idea of game basically is this, that the nature of the world is musical. That is to say, it is doing all these forms of trees and stars and people and all their complexities just to do them. It has no purpose beyond doing it. And in exactly the same way, in music, music has no destination. It isn't aimed at the future. It does travel in time, that is true. But it doesn't aim at a goal in time. The point of music is every phrase as it unfolds itself, and as you perceive the relationship of those phrases to earlier and later phrases. But music itself is dance. It's dancing with sound, and likewise in the art of dancing, you are not traveling. You are not aiming at a particular place. You are dancing to dance. And so what you might call the musical or game theory of the world is that everything that is happening is its own point. It's true that things do develop. For example, the seed develops into the tree. And you might say,
we do it, but we don't know how we do it. Because you see, underneath the superficial self, which pays attention to this and that, there is another self, more really us than I. And if you become aware of that unknown self, the more you become aware of it, the more you realize that it is inseparably connected with everything else that there is.
It's like three. Did you ever see three? Just plain, ordinary three? No, nobody ever saw it. It's a concept, it's a vikalpa. So in the same way as oneself. There's the happening, the suchness, yes, sure, you bet. But it's not pushing you around because there's no you to be pushed around. In other words, there's no billiard ball on the end of the queue. There's the queue, you know.
Going down below a certain number of feet, I don't know exactly how far it is, but get a sense of weightlessness. And at the same time, this deprives them of every sense of responsibility. They become alarmingly happy. And they have been known to simply take off their masks and offer them to a fish. And of course, they then drown. So if you skin dive and you have to keep your eye on the time. You have to have a water watch or a friend who's got a string attached to you. If you go down that far, and at a certain specific time, you know you have got to get back. However happy you feel, and however much inclined to say, survival, what the hell's the point of that? And this is happening to the men who go out into space. They will increasingly find that they have to have automatic controls to bring them back. Quite aside that they...
Why do we have that ghastly kind of sickly yellow stained glass in church buildings, especially Protestant ones? There's something about it. And then, too, in the pulpit, there's a certain kind of funny solemnity that goes with preaching. And children immediately detect that there's something phony about it. Why does that man put on a special voice which isn't
by God? You must love me. Well, that's a double bind. You can't love on purpose. You can't be sincere purposely. It's like trying not to think of a green elephant while taking medicine. But if a person really tries to do it, so, you know, this is the way Christianity is rigged. You should be very sorry for your sins. And though everybody knows they're not, but they think they ought to be, and so they go around trying to be penitent or trying to be humble. And they know the more assiduously they practice it, the phonier and phonier the whole thing gets. And so in this way, it's called the technique of reductio ad absurdum. if you think you have a problem, you see, and that you're an ego and that you're in difficulty, the answer that the Zen master makes to you is, show me your ego. I want to see this thing that... carry on his father's business. So if you're the son of a priest, it's sort of expected that you'll be one too. So off to the monastery with you. It was the same in England in the 18th century, where the oldest son of the family went into the army, the second son into the law, I forget which order it was, and the third son anyway went into the ministry. Well, that means a whole lot of people who are in theological school haven't got the slightest interest in religion. Not real interest. And so they have to be taught to think. So St. Ignatius, for example, made out methods of meditation. A, B, C, D, proximate consideration, remote consideration, the meditation itself, the resolution at the end, and so on. This is simply designs to teach people how to think who had never thought and weren't interested in thinking. So in much the same way, these things have occurred in the Far East. And a great deal of it.
In great rooms surrounded with radar screens and all sorts of things, and earphones on, watching all the movements of planes all over the world. So in the same way, we have really the idea of ourselves as a little man inside our heads who has earphones on, which bring messages from the ears, and who has a television set in front of him, which brings messages from the eyes, and all sorts of...
So this is a view of the world as a system of mutual exploitation and of maximal selfishness. Now, it's a very profitable view to explore. Everybody should do in their lifetime sometime two things. One is to consider death, to observe skulls and skeletons, and to wonder what it will be like to go to sleep and never wake up. Never. That is a very gloomy thing for contemplation, but it's like manure. Just as manure fertilizes the plants and so on, so the contemplation of death and the acceptance of death is very highly generative of creative life. You get wonderful things out of that. And the other thing to contemplate is to follow the possibility of the idea that you... pleasure, etc. So, insofar as the problem posed in Buddhism is dukkha, I don't want to suffer, and I want to find someone or something that can cure me of suffering. That's the problem. Now, then if there's a person who solved the problem, a Buddha, people come to him and say, Master, how do we get out of this problem? So what he does is to propose certain things to them. First of all, he points out that with dukkha go two other things. These are respectively called anitya, and...
And you can't touch the tip of this finger with the tip of this finger. And that's why there's always an element of profound mystery in the problem of who we are. This problem has fascinated me for many years, and I've made many inquiries. What do you mean by the word I? And there is a certain consensus about this, a certain...
into the picture. And the two either come towards each other or go away from each other. Then we can say that both of them
or either of them is in motion. We can't decide which is the one that's doing the moving. Because it could be one, could be the other. Now we'll put three balls into space. And we find two of them staying together and the other one going away. Now it's up to the two of them to decide whether the other one is going away from them or they are going away from the other, because two is a majority in this case. And the vote always, of course, goes to the majority. The universe being basically a democratic organization. And so it goes. Now, once you've got that, you can see that
trees and mountains. They are orderly, but we cannot put our finger on the order. We know it's orderly, but we don't know why. And we know it's completely different from a mess. The order of nature is in that way then indefinable. When St. Augustine was asked, what is time? He said, I know what it is, but when you ask me, I don't. And so in the same way, the Chinese would say, we know what the order of nature is, but if you ask us, we don't. The poet says, picking chrysanthemums along the eastern fence, gazing in silence at the southern hills, the birds fly home through the soft mountain air of dusk. In all these things there is a deep meaning, but when we are about to express it, we suddenly forget the words. That's Li.
Equally important is not what is the tiniest particle, but in what context is the tiniest particle. You see? In relation to what is it? Just as the word bark, as I showed you, has different meanings in different sentences. So, cells, molecules, atoms, have different properties in different contexts. So what the scientist equally needs to study is not simply what is anything when very, very minutely analyzed, but where is it? When is it? That makes all the difference. So do you see that a lot of people who get anxious when they hear that everything is relative have no change in any way from the spaceship? Now, isn't that interesting? Can you become weightless here? I said a little while ago that the person who really accepts transience begins to feel weightless. When Suzuki was asked, what is it like to have experienced Satori, enlightenment, he said, it's just like ordinary everyday experience, but about 2 inches off the ground. Zhuangzi, the Taoist, said, it is easy enough to stand still. The difficulty is to walk without touching the ground. Now, why do you feel so heavy? It isn't just a matter of gravitation and weight. It is that you feel that you are carrying your body around. So there is a koan in Zen Buddhism. Who is it that carries this corpse around? And so when you feel weak,
our memory, our comprehension, and indeed our very love, we've tried to force it with muscles. Men will understand me if I say, you cannot force by muscular effort yourself to have an erection. Women will understand me if I say, you cannot force yourself with muscles to have an orgasm. It has to happen, and you must trust it to happen. And there is absolutely nothing you can do about it by using your muscles. Nothing, nothing, nothing. So, in precisely the same way. Well, let's complete the picture. So, therefore, the notion that we have of ourselves, of ego, is a compound of an image of ourselves which does not fit the facts, and a sensation of muscular straining which is futile. So that what you conceive to be yourself is the marriage of an illusion and a futility. So, well, what are we? If that isn't the case. Well, obviously, if you want to take a scientific point of view, by that mythology, then your organism, about which we know very little, and the organism, as we've seen, is inseparable from its environment. And so you are the organism environment. In other words, you are no less than the universe. Each one of you is the universe expressed in the place which you feel is here and now. You're an aperture.
You tend to ignore the background. You tend, therefore, to see the world in a disintegrated aspect. You take separate things and events seriously, imagining that these really do exist, when actually they have the same kind of existence as an individual's interpretation of a Rorschach plot. They're what you make out of it. In fact, our physical world is a system of inseparable differences. Everything exists with everything else. But we contrive not to notice that, because what we notice is what is noteworthy. And we notice it in terms of notations. Numbers, words, images. What is notable, noteworthy, notated, noticed. And is that going to be solved by chastity? I doubt it. Taking a rather realistic view of things. No, I don't think that when I ask myself, what is the point of continuing the species, we get back to the thing I was raising this morning about survival. Why go on? What's it about? Do you live to eat, or do you eat to live? Here. Up beside me. Chair A, chair B. We're going to have a discussion, and these two students are going to come back. We will agree with everything that is said by the student who sits in chair A. We will disagree with everything said by the student in chair B. The effect of this was astounding. Because even if the student sitting in chair A was rather inarticulate, the fact that the audience is taken in thoroughly and they believe the play is real. What skill? How marvelous. But you see, in all acting, there is behind the stage a green room. Out on the stage, the Lord does not come on as the Lord. He comes on as you and I, heroes and villains. But off scene, he assumes his true nature and doffs his mask, which in Latin is his persona. In classical drama, the persona was the megaphone mouth mask worn for the open-air theater. And by a curious degradation of words, the word person has come to mean the real individual. And when Harry Emerson Fosdick wrote How to Be a Real Person, the real title of his book should have been How to Be a Genuine Fake. Well, now this image, this model, he took the Buddha image, one of the Buddha images off the altar, split it up and made a fire. And when the attendant of the temple came in the morning, he was horrified. Broke at the image, and Tankar took his stick, started raking in the ashes. And the temple priest said, what are you looking for? He said, I'm looking for the Sali, that is to say the jewels that are supposed to be found in the body of a genuine Buddha when he's cremated. So the priest said, you couldn't expect to find Sali from a wooden Buddha. In that case, said Tangkor, let me have that other Buddha for my fire. That's, you see, the difference between living Buddha and stone Buddha. But a person who thinks that in order to be awakened, you have to be heartless, to have no emotions, no feelings, that you couldn't possibly lose your temper or get angry or feel annoyed or depressed, those people haven't got the right idea at all. If that's your ideal, said Eno, you might just as well... That's why we like a striptease. Because there's an implication that this... You should never give the show completely away. There always should be a little bit of a veil left, you see. There always is. Because even if you find the striptease artist gets completely naked, there's really something hidden. What's the motivation? What sort of a person is she? Would I really like to embrace her? Or would she have bad breath? You know? Or something. And you never really know. You never really get to the bottom. That's why everybody, all men, poets, say that women are basically mysterious. And they ought to be. So are men basically mysterious, from women's point of view. Although they play that they're not. See, this is the way it goes. Men are supposed to be very open. And they say, well, of a certain situation, this is the way it is. After all, it's perfectly rational.
Which you really are, fundamentally and forever, is the whole of being. All that there is, the works, that's you. Only that universal self that is you has the capacity to focus itself at ever so many different here and nows.